Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
I'm Ben Kinslow.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
The views and perspective we receive through different channels of communication can change, but truth and facts will remain the same. In any situation, those portraying it have the choice to show negative side, a neutral side, or a positive side. In regards to Israel and the Palestinians, a majority of information is slanted as negative toward Israel, and gaining a balanced perspective can be very challenging.
Well, that's a good point, Earl. And finding a balanced perspective can sometimes be as challenging as finding a positive one. Yet when situations are analyzed, it's been shown that Israel is working hard to be a good neighbor, both to neighboring countries and to those who are residents within her own land, but do not claim to be part of her historical people.
History demonstrates that lasting peace comes out of trying to work together and focusing on building bridges rather than tearing them down. Words can be destructive just as easily as actions. Recently, Kevin Howard spoke with Bassam Eid to gain his perspective on what actions are needed to bring a lasting positive outcome between Israelis and Palestinians. We'll bring you that interesting interview in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. Under the mediation of a neutral third party, Israel will partner with neighboring Red Sea countries, including Saudi Arabia and Sudan, to establish a research center for the study, monitoring, and protection of coral reef ecosystems. The Red Sea Transnational Research Center will include partners from Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, Sudan, Yemen. Coral reefs are a critically important home to millions of marine species threatened and dying as a result of several local factors, including pollution, overfishing, and physical destruction. Recent studies have shown that coral reefs in the Red Sea are extremely resistant to stress and rising seawater temperatures. The corals are, however, still threatened by fish farming, agricultural runoff, industrial and urban waste discharge, and future seawater desalination activities. According to the researchers, however, these threats can be best overcome through knowledge sharing and regional coordination. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
Viktor Frankl was born on March 26, 1905. This famed psychiatrist is a Holocaust survivor and the author of one of the greatest books ever written, where he chronicled his experiences as a concentration camp inmate, which led him to discover the importance of finding meaning in all forms of existence, even the most brutal ones. In his own words, the best of us did not return. Life is like being at the dentist. You always think that the worst is still to come, and yet it is over already. Quoting Nietzsche, he wrote, "He who has a why to live for can bear with almost anyhow. Man, however, is able to live and even to die for the sake of his ideals and values. Man needs something for the sake of which to live. For success, like happiness, cannot be pursued. It must ensue, and it only does so as the unintended side effect of one's personal dedication to a cause greater than oneself, or as the byproduct of one's surrender to a person other than oneself. Success will follow you precisely because you had forgotten to think of it." Frankl published 39 books, which were translated into as many as 40 languages. His contributions to the fields of psychiatry and psychology endure to this day.
Welcome back, everybody. While much of the world stage enjoys focusing on Palestinian violence, we are joined today by one Palestinian who has a different perspective on the big picture, one that understands the need to form a positive future for Palestinians with Israel. Kevin Howard spoke with him to find out more.
Thanks, Earl. I am indeed speaking with Bassam Eid today in this studio. Bassam, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kevin.
Bassam, tell us a little bit about your childhood and growing up in the old city of Jerusalem.
Yeah, as I told you, I born in the old city, in a very specific neighborhood in the old city called the Jewish Quarter. We used, in my childhood, when everybody asked me, where are you living? I used to say in Arabic, Jewish Quarter. And as I remember when I became 7 years old, and it was exactly in June 66, the Jordanian army came to my neighborhood. And they told 500 Palestinian families who used to live in the Jewish Quarter that the Jordanian government decided to evacuate these 500 families from the Jewish Quarter to the north of Jerusalem in a place called, till today, Shafat Refugee Camp. You know, in that time, most of the 500 families were very happy to move to Shafat Refugee Camp. You know why? Because people tried to save the fees of the rent. So my father was very happy. And I remember that after he signed the whole forms, he ran after the army by asking, who is going to transfer our furniture? Then the soldiers said, don't worry, we will pay for the transferring of the furniture. So we moved in June 66, which means exactly 1 year before the 67 war. And we located in Shafat Refugee Camp, where I developed and grown up for 33 years. So who made me a refugee, by the way, is the Jordanian government, not the Israelis. And nobody till today succeed to give an explanation why that's happened exactly 1 year before the 67 war. Neither a Jordanian nor a Palestinian, even not an Israeli, who succeed to find a kind of a logical explanation why the Jordanian government took such a step. I got married there. I got children in Shafat refugee camp. Only in 1999, I succeed, you know, to buy an apartment outside the camp. And since 1999, I left the camp.
So tell me then, in the communities you work within, what's your purpose, your leadership role?
I am originally a journalist, graduated from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. I started, let's say, my human rights career with an Israeli organization called B'Tselem. I work as the main field worker for B'Tselem for 7.5 years, documenting in that time, you know, violations committed by the Israeli army against Palestinians from Jenin in the north to Rafah in the south of Gaza Strip. After the Oslo Agreement, I decided to resign from B'Tselem to create a Palestinian organization called the Palestinian Human Rights Monitoring Group to monitor and to observe the violations committed by the Palestinian Authority against the Palestinians. Imagine to create a human rights organization under the Arab regime. It looks like to commit a suicide. So I was arrested by Arafat few months after the foundation of the organization. But I was so lucky that I kept in jail in that time only for 25 hours because the only one who succeeded to release me was a foreign secretary of the U.S. under Bill Clinton's administration called Juan Christopher. He picked up the telephone. He talked to Yasser Arafat in Ramallah by giving him 5 minutes to release me. And since, let's say, 96 until today, I think that my arrest almost gave me a huge impunity from the Palestinian Authority. You know, I used to live in Jericho for 14 years. 14 years, which is completely under the sovereignty of the Palestinian Authority. And nobody tried, you know, ever to disturb me over there. The shift from the Israeli violations to the Palestinian Authority violations, I think that that's almost gave me a huge credibility, let's say, among the international community, where, you know, I received also a lot of international awards and prizes around the world.
Bassam, you've been placed in an interesting position with your culture, your birthplace, your nationality. So tell us what you see when you look around your own people group.
In my opinion, the majority of the Palestinians these days almost lost the trust in their own leadership. I'm not talking only about the West Bank. I'm talking about the Gaza Strip also and the Hamas, who is ruling the Gaza Strip over there. If you will come today to any ordinary Palestinian and asking him, what are the most three priorities that you are seeking? He will say a job to survive, to secure the education system and the health system for my children. Nobody is talking about settlements. Nobody is talking about the war. Nobody even talking about the foundation of the Palestinian state, which is, in my opinion, the majority of the Palestinians are people who are seeking dignity rather than identity. I used to go, you know, around most of the refugee camps in the West Bank and to teach the Palestinian refugees there that homeland is not the place where you're born. Homeland is the place where you can get dignity, justice, and freedoms. Any country around the world will assure me these three important issues, I have no problem to be considered as their own citizen. I think that the majority of the Palestinians almost realized that since Oslo Agreement until today, they are moving backward rather than forward from the economic point of view. So my message is around the world, how we can increase the economic prosperity of the Palestinians. I am a Palestinian who believes that if the international community will succeed to increase the Palestinian economy, that probably will decrease the Palestinian violence.
So when you look at the division between the Fatah and the Hamas, how does that affect the people to have two governments rather than a unified leadership?
I think that the major conflict here between the Fatah and the Hamas is the conflict between religion and politics. Everybody knows that the Hamas has much more a kind of a religious agenda, while the PLO and the Fatah in Ramallah has a completely political agenda. Here is the main conflict. And while you have such conflict between politics and religion, you will never ever be able to reach any kind of unity. I am not expecting any kind of unity, at least in the coming 10 years, between the Fatah and the Hamas. I think that the Palestinian leadership right now is not even calling for the two-state solution. I think that they are much more calling for three-state solution for two people, because Hamas is defending their own Islamic Emirate in the Gaza Strip. Abbas is defending his own empire in the West Bank and the State of Israel. This is how we are living, let's say, in the past 11 years since the Hamas took over the Gaza Strip in 2007. And looks like that everybody is so satisfied with his own. The two-state solution for the international community right now became a kind of a slogan only, a kind of a song. When they need people to start dancing, then everybody starts singing two-state solution for two people. But in the meantime, I didn't see one country around the world who try really to put efforts towards moving to the two-state solution. Sometimes it makes me very upset, you know, when some European countries' leaders standing up by saying, if Israel is not going to resume the peace negotiations with the Palestinians, we are going to recognize the Palestinian state. Excuse me, which state you are going to recognize? State which is in a lack of economic sources of state. State which is in a lack of institutions of state. A state where is 54% of its populations are living in a refugee camp. This is not the state that I'm looking for. This is not the state that the Palestinians are really dreaming for. So those European leaders must have to understand one important fact, that a state must have to be built before it's recognized. And I didn't see right now that the Palestinian leadership are really able to build a state. And again, Gaza is an excellent example. Since the Israelis left the Gaza Strip in 2005, what we, the Palestinians, did in the Gaza Strip, in my opinion, we destroyed what remains from the Israeli occupation in the Gaza Strip. So it was one of the most failure tests that Ariel Sharon put the Palestinian leadership on it when he decided to withdraw from Gaza. I think that the people in Gaza knows very well that before the Israeli withdrawal, their economic situation was much better than these days.
As we consider the challenge of perspectives and historical honesty, we cannot forget to pray against the worldview of incitement that is constantly propagated, as well as lasting peace within and around Israel. But right now, we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a special project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a difference for some special people in the land of Israel today.
You stand on duty, with the wind biting through your uniform. The day is overcast, and winter's chill bites deeper as the day progresses on into evening. You hear rumors of what some in the nations say about you as an IDF soldier. You wonder if anyone outside of Israel ever really cares. The next morning, you hear that you are going to have visitors. A small group of civilians is arriving, bringing fleece jackets, hats, smiles, and support from the nations. As you interact, you cannot help but feel the genuine care and love expressed by these new friends from something called Project David's Shield. With a warm jacket and very cool hat, you sit to listen as these new friends explain the care and concern that so many in the nations have for the tiny nation you protect. You learn that they consider you the modern-day warriors of David's army, defending the people of the land. Your heart is warmed by more than the jacket they provide. It is also warmed by the knowledge that you are not alone. There are many who really care.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, David's Shield. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Bassem Eid, taking a deliberate look at what the world perceives as the ongoing challenges to peace and unified prosperity throughout Israel.
So in order to help the economic situation for Palestinians, such movements like BDS taking out SodaStream and moving buildings, how does that help the people?
I think that this organization, the so-called BDS, is causing a huge damage to the Palestinians much more than to the Israelis. You mentioned the SodaStream. What are the consequences of by moving the SodaStream from the West Bank to the south of Israel? 1,500 Palestinian workers lost their jobs. What are the consequences of on the SodaStream itself? Now, the yearly budget of SodaStream, since they moved, became three times more than it used to be in the West Bank. So who is the losers here? We are the losers. So this is the first step. Imagine those parliamentarians and European parliaments who are supporting the BDS. Imagine how much money these parliaments are losing for nothing, for nothing. Let us bring this money and try to invest it in the Palestinian economy. I think that that will benefit every Palestinian here in the West Bank or in the Gaza Strip. This is the first important thing. Secondly, we are talking about a kind of a regional economic zones or industrial zones. It doesn't mean necessarily only for the Palestinians. It could be for the Palestinians, the Egyptians, and Israel in the south. And in the West Bank, it could be in cooperation between Israel, Palestinians, and Jordan. I think Jordan also needs such kind of economy. I believe that Egypt also needs such kind of economy. Israel could be a huge investor here. I think that the world should have to start opening his eyes more and more and to see what we can benefit from Israel rather than just to stand up and to criticize Israel from far away. That will never benefit the Palestinians. That will never benefit the conflict. That will add oil to the flame only. Let us be more realistic and see what we can benefit from Israel.
Tell me your thoughts on the situation with UNRWA. What needs to change for the next generation to have a better hope for their future?
See, I am a person who started probably fighting, let me call myself, against UNRWA, probably several years ago. I wrote an article, I remember, in December 2014, asking to reform UNRWA. I think that UNRWA need to be reformed, especially the textbooks that they are teaching our pupils in the elementary schools in Gaza and in the West Bank, in the Palestinian refugees diaspora. In Jordan, you have the same curriculum of Gaza. Listen, how you can teach the Gazan people to fight occupation, but what you can tell the Jordanians to fight whom? Who occupied Jordan right now? But because they are Palestinians, they want, you know, to increase the violence and to increase the hatred among these pupils against Israel, not only in Gaza and the West Bank, but everywhere around the world. So I used to say that UNRWA unfortunately became a part of the conflict rather than it is a part of the solution. And this is one of the major problems that, in my opinion, the international community should have to start focusing on. I am against to cut the funding from UNRWA, but I am with reforming UNRWA. If you will take as an example the $65 million which has been cut by the American administration to UNRWA, now UNRWA almost raised $100 million instead of that. So by cutting the funding is not going to change the policy. Let us bring UNRWA here on the table and to say, listen, if you will change your curriculum within 3 months, I am going to donate $100 million for you. I think that that probably will be much better for the international community and for the Palestinians. But unfortunately, sometimes I used to say that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict became a business conflict rather than it is a political conflict. Everybody is defending his own income, including UNRWA, including the BDS, including the UN, including the UNESCO. Everybody is fighting for his own interest, not for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to be solved. This is one of the major problems right now, that while you still have a lot of money spent on this conflict will never, ever be solved.
Tell me some of the things you see in the relationship between Arabs and Jews that are in normal life that people don't really see.
You know, sometimes it will be very difficult to explain for the outsiders what is really going on. I just recommend to anyone around the world who is able to make a visit to Israel, to make a visit to Israel and to come and to see by your own eyes which good level of life we the Arabs have under the Israelis.
Bassam Eid, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Well, thank you for that insightful interview, Kevin. It's a good reminder that what is the current focus of the camera may not be the full picture. A truth still more relevant when the camera in question is focused microscopically on a single issue in regards to Israel. Well, our time is almost up for this week, and coming up, we'll hear from David Nkrutman with this week's Bible on the Go. But first, another visit to the CFIJ News Desk and David Milburn.
Thanks, Ben. The answer to the question of ownership of the land of Israel has been answered without turning to the Bible, the UN, or the Balfour Declaration in the arguments that rage across Israel. If anyone needs more proof that the land of Israel belongs to the Jews, here it is. Everyone knows the story of King Solomon and the two women who appeared before him with a baby. Each woman claimed that the child belonged to her. King Solomon decreed that the baby be cut in half and divided between the two. And while one woman protested, the other woman was ready to have her baby sliced in half with a sword as long as the other woman didn't get him, and thus clearly wasn't the child's real mother. So too with the fires raging all over Israel, what person would purposely burn his own land, verdant mountains, woods, trees and stones, and kill its helpless forest creatures? The Arabs who are setting fires across the country don't have any qualms. Why should they? It isn't their land. What do they care? They aren't the real mother. A baby has one mother, not two. Just as France belongs to the French and Spain to the Spanish, the land of Israel belongs to the Jews. The idea that Arabs would be happy citizens of a Jewish state is a fallacy from its inception. They want the whole state with their own language, holidays and culture, and they want it free of Jews. Sharing the baby doesn't work, no matter how much you suppress the violence, no matter how much economic incentive you offer, no matter how you see to equal opportunities, the Arabs in Israel will always want their own country. Before we return to Earl and Ben, here's David DeKruppman with this week's Bible on the Go.
Growing up in an Orthodox Jewish household and seeing my friends go out on Friday evening in their cars to the movies or on Saturday morning to the baseball games, I often felt jealous that they were able to be free to do what they wanted, and here I am restricted not to go ahead and do some of this Sabbath stuff. I looked at it as a list of do's and don'ts, but it took a person of great stature who impacted my life greatly, Rabbi Dr. Gerald Meister, and he said a very interesting line to me. You have to understand the why of the Sabbath before the how of the Sabbath. For him, the why of the Sabbath is clearly indicated in the Bible, in the Ten Commandments, in fact. It is about God the Creator and God the Redeemer. And we need a 25-hour period where we can go ahead and focus totally on that concept of who is God in this world and what has He done, not only collectively as a nation, but personally as well in our own lives. We are commanded to go ahead and work 6 days and really unleash our creative power. That is what really separates us from the animal kingdom. But creative power needs a rest, a release from external obligations, and to focus on internal relationships with God, family, and the community. Sabbath is not just about a cessation of work, but a powerful force to imitate the holiness of God. It is a time from where we go from a pause of earning our livelihoods to a reflection of yearning for God. It is a day not to pursue mastery, but to celebrate mystery. This is David DeKruppman with Bible on the Go.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody. And thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station, because this station supports Israel.
And before we go, we want to remind you to please pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And let me invite you to join us on this station again next week as we bring you all the latest from Israel and the Middle East.
So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media, Incorporated.